Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Happy Friday, or welcome to Friday, the end of Friday, Friday evening. It's been a weird day. Boy, the shooting in Binghamton. I don't want to dwell on it too much because you know what? To paraphrase somebody, those kinds of mass killings have become as American as apple pie. What a cynical, horrible thing to say, but I mean, in the past, what's it been? The past couple of weeks? Month, we had 8 dead at a nursing home shooting in North Carolina, and then 10 dead at a rampage in Alabama, then 14 dead today in upstate New York. It just, you know, if you're not around CNN during the day or MSNBC, you hear it on the nightly news or maybe news on your radios at the top of the hour, and it's like, oh, another shooting? Oh, okay. I can't even comment on it, so I won't. The late reports say this guy recently had lost his job. If that, he worked at what? Was it IBM or one of the? Sounded like he had a white collar job, and he was recently either fired or laid off. One of the two. Now, whether or not that has anything to do with what happened, what pushed him over the edge, I guess we'll not know because he's dead. But I couldn't start the program without at least acknowledging that. There's something really, you know, in Michael Moore's movie, Bowling for Columbine, he gets into this, this thing in this country that makes people do stuff like that. Man. The state of New York, in order to try to handle its budget deficit, and apparently it has a pretty big one, you know, they have a new governor, Patterson. And he said fiscal and political realities had forced him to come up with this, not him, but his fellow Democrats. Patterson apparently didn't want to raise taxes, but the Democrats that now control the legislature in New York State insisted on raising the tax rate for New York's highest earners. For people making over $500,000 a year, you know, $500,000 is the floor, that or up are now subject to an 8.97% income tax. So if the governor and Mayor Bloomberg are correct, both of them were absolute anti-tax people, if they're correct, then there should be this great exodus from New York coming. Right? Everybody's going to leave. I seriously doubt that. I really doubt that there's going to be an exodus. But one prominent person intends to seek shelter from the storm, so to speak, somewhere else. And that is the Pig Man. Now, the Pig Man has a couple of properties in Manhattan. You know, he uses them as chick bait. And when you're the Pig Man, yeah, you got a lot of money, but you got to have something, a lot of money, a nice pied-à-terre. How do you pronounce that? Is that how you say it, Kathy? Pied-à-terre?
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
Thanks. You've got to have, you know, you've got to have your crib in Midtown Manhattan where you can, you know, score some girls occasionally, not women. But apparently that's not working for Limbaugh. So this tax is just too much for him. So he says he's leaving because of, quote, the stupid, punitive, massive tax increases. Now, Limbaugh makes, doesn't he make $50 million a year, and he got a 10-year contract? That's $500 million for doing essentially what every radio talk show host does 3 hours a day, only with a twist, of course. Limbaugh is a psychopath and a junkie and, among other things, God only knows what's really lurking beneath the surface of this guy. But he's also an America hater. And apparently there's a lot of people in this country who love America haters because they do turn and listen to him. They really do. I don't know if it's for the freaking geek value or if it's just because he's there, you know. But anyway, he said that New Yorkers were probably going to celebrate his departure. As far as the governor of the state is concerned, Governor Patterson, he said Limbaugh leaving is good news. Patterson said, if I knew that this tax increase would bring that result, I would have thought about the taxes earlier. You know, nobody with any sense likes Limbaugh. That's the thing. The only people who like or listen to him are fools and people who just simply cannot think for themselves. They can't. They're very comfortable hating anything that is not like them. And a lot of things that are like them, they are condemned. Limbaugh followers are condemned to a life of a very sour kind of life because they've chosen to follow even as they go into their unemployment and watch their tiny little stock portfolios disappear. They've chosen to follow somebody who hates America, who hates them, has zero respect. Limbaugh doesn't like his listeners, but it's a way to make a damn good living. So for him, not for anyone else. So, rather than hating Limbaugh followers, I've really kind of come to hold them in kind of sour, pathetic contempt. It's just astonishing to me that people still find him listenable. John Stewart on the TV the other night on the Daily Show, Stewart had a little fun with him. Let's play some of it.
But I'm not sure any of us truly comprehend the devastating ramifications of this recession / depression / that we've been going through until now.
Personal income taxes for the upper middle class and the rich are about to skyrocket 31% for all New Yorkers making more than $500,000 a year. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to look for an alternative studio somewhere outside New York. I'll sell my apartment. I'll sell my condominium. I'm going to get out of there totally because this is just absurd and it's ridiculous.
Finally! You know, for years, New Yorkers have done everything in our power to get this guy to leave town. We passed laws making it tougher for hot dog vendors to sell on the streets. We hold gay pride parades. There are barely any gay people in the city. We just thought it would make them uncomfortable, so we shipped them in. We've all, as New Yorkers, come together to do this one thing, get rid of Rush Limbaugh. He was the Truman in our citywide Truman Show. We knew he was into drugs, so we cleaned up Times Square. Even opened up a Disney store in the very place he would normally go to buy drugs. We knew he liked cigars. So we all in New York made an agreement that people who smoke cigars are douchebags. Fleets of Ivy League educated cab drivers pretended to be surly Middle Easterners. Just to annoy Rush Limbaugh. We outlawed murder. Figuring he's the kind of guy who's probably got a taste for it. The whole reason we've got to raise taxes in New York City is because of how expensive this whole decades-long charade has been. You know how much it costs to keep Chinatown filled with Chinese extras? But you know, no, I don't even want to talk about it. Now that I know that he's going, I don't know, man, I feel weird. I feel weird inside. I guess there's one more thing I want to say to him. If you're heading out from uptown, take 42nd Street West, 9th Avenue, make a left, go down four blocks. Lincoln Tunnel's on your right, and you know what? Here's my easy pass. Get the f*** out of here.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class.
Yes, you're.
Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
And as you probably know by now, the Iowa Supreme Court ruled today that equal protection under the law still exists, even in Iowa. Actually, it exists in all 50 states, but about 40 or 45 of the 50 states, maybe 40 of the 50 states, have passed laws trying to gut the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution. And slowly, 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 each one of those state laws will be found to be unconstitutional where it concerns the U.S. Constitution. So Iowa Supreme Court today said that banning same-sex marriages violated the Iowa state constitution. So, you know, their equal protection clause. Now, a lot of people on the foaming, frothing, mouth-breathing Christian right, I saw a couple today, this Tony Perkins character from whatever, one of those Christian groups. You know, they're all frothing at the mouth about this and saying things like, well, the Iowa Supreme Court today legalized gay marriages. And no, it didn't. It didn't do anything of the sort. What the Iowa Supreme Court ruled today was that you cannot have laws that apply to some people and not others. You cannot allow people, according to the Iowa State Constitution, certain rights and deny those rights to other people. That's what the Supreme Court ruled. Now, it just so happens that that includes the right to marriage. So the the right wing in this country is just, you know, peeing its pants tonight about this ruling because, I mean, you know, like, wow, man, it's Iowa! Iowa! Jesus. As People for the American Way Foundation President Michael Keegan said, the Iowa Supreme Court's decision is an historic affirmation of equality. It is a joyous day for the Iowa families involved in the case and for equality advocates in Iowa and across the nation. Congratulations to the courageous couples who challenged unfair and unconstitutional discrimination. And Keegan went on to urge, you know, Americans, it doesn't apply to you or me because we are not brain-dead limbots, but I think he was addressing them when he said they shouldn't be confused by expected distortions that will come of today's ruling from opponents of marriage equality. Keegan said, quote, Americans rely on independent courts to uphold constitutional principles, and that's what the Iowa Supreme Court did today. The court did its job. The ruling protects Iowa families. And it reaffirms the state's tradition as a leader in ending historic forms of discrimination. I said this is only the third state. It's astonishing to me, isn't it to you, that we are in a brand new century, well into it now, and we still are talking about whether or not denying same-sex couples the right to form civil unions. Or, you know, call it what you want, a marriage, whatever. the Supreme Court does not rule. And this is what pisses me off about these religious nut cases. The Supreme Court did not rule in Iowa that churches or synagogues or mosques had to swing open their doors and sanctify same-sex marriages. You know, a church can decide that it will only perform marriages between an asparagus and a peach if it wants to, and the state's not going to interfere. The state just won't sanction it. And remember, it is not the churches or the synagogues who have the final say. It is the state. Why do these religious nutballs not understand that? There's not a gay couple in America who would go up the steps of a Baptist or a Methodist or a Presbyterian or whatever church is, a Christian church that denies same-sex couples' right to marriage. There's not a gay couple in America that would climb the steps to a church and beat on the doors and say, you must sanctify our marriage. I mean, it's asinine. Of course they wouldn't. And that's because every single minister, rabbi, imam, or anyone who performs marriages, legal marriages in this country, has to say at the end of the ceremony, now by the power vested in me by the state of blank, I pronounce you husband and wife. By the power vested in that preacher by the state. It's not the other way around. So if it is the state that determines the law, the state may not have two sets of laws. It is so simple. Why is this an issue? Why do the right-wingers and the Christian psychopaths get their bloomers in a wad about this? My God! And remember, in effectively denying individuals equal protection under the law, if they can do it to mixed-race couples, which they could in this country up until, what, 67? At least in Virginia they could. If they can do it to same-sex couples, you know, who's next? This is bat snot, and I just wish the Christian psychopaths and the Jewish psychopaths and the Muslim psychopaths, all these religious nutballs who find fault in this, would just shut up. Go pray, will you? Go pray.
Because the woman there, she took his ring, took his babies, it took him minutes, took her nowhere.
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
It's about 25 before the hour. We mentioned the other night about after Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, ordered a dismissal of the conviction and vacating of the charges that Senator Ted Stevens was convicted of, and also ordered no new trial. In other words, it's all over for any kind of legal action against Ted Stevens, whether he was guilty or not. The fact is, the prosecutors who were trying to get him committed so many errors that you would think that they were not really prosecutors, that they were just Bush administration employees. Oops, I guess that's what they were. So Eric Holder had no choice. If we are to be to return to the idea of a nation of laws, that's one place to start. We still have a hell of a long way to go. But Eric Holder is to be certainly congratulated for that, as we talked about the other night. And we also suggested that Don Siegelman should have any charges against him vacated and dropped completely. He is the former Democratic governor of Alabama who was targeted for political assassination by Karl Rove and the assassination was carried out. I got an email from the genetic liberal who wrote and said Governor Siegelman does not want a pardon. He wants a fair trial with a new prosecutor and judge. President Obama does not want this trial because if Rove is found to have railroaded Don Siegelman, this would necessitate another trial in which Rove might start throwing everyone under the bus, including the Democrats. Well, that's certainly a stretch, genetic liberal, and I just completely disagree with your premise here that the Obama Justice Department's not going to do anything about the Siegelman case because of the possibility that Karl Rove would start singing. Just as there are rules of evidence that manners in which cases can proceed in a court of law in Alaska, that also applies in Alabama. If Siegelman is granted a new trial, which he may, I think, just a blanket dismissal of the conviction and the charges, not a pardon. That's not what Ted Stevens got. Ted Stevens was convicted of multi-felony counts, same as, I believe, Siegelman. I know he was convicted to the point that he was jailed because he was a Democrat. So we're not talking about pardons here in either case. What we're talking about is the proper application of the rules of evidence and precedents where it concerns how charges are brought and carried out in a courtroom against a defendant. That has been, for the longest time, a hallmark of American justice where it concerned white people. You know, now where it concerned black folk, well, that was, you know, it was a joke, especially in the South, but also in the North and the West and the East and all points on the compass. Black folk understood that they were not going to be protected by any damn constitution, whether it was the state of Alabama or the state of Iowa or the United States. They knew it. But if an effort is being made to turn things around and say, look, we've got to get to the principles laid out in the Constitution. We were on the way to that until the Bush crime family took over. We have got to reestablish or not trash the goddamn thing then. Just trash it. Just forget about it. Let's stop playing head games with each other. If we are not a nation of laws, let's declare it and say we are now a nation of executive decisions and let it go at that. This pisses me off. It really does. You know, this case, this ruling in Iowa, it takes a Supreme Court ruling to say this law is unconstitutional. What moron can't look at a law that says these people can get married, these people can't? What's the difference? Well, they're queer. So what? So everything. I mean, does it take a genius to figure out that's not the way you do it if you have a constitution? Oh my God. That's why so many of these right-wing jerkwads want to amend their state's constitutions. So they're, and some of them have succeeded so that, an attempt to, bring about justice and equality will be thwarted by the Constitution. Now, we all know that these state constitutions do not supersede the U.S. Constitution. So even passing their little crappy-ass amendments to the Constitution is not ultimately, if the case makes its way to the Supreme Court of the United States, going to succeed. But I digress. The same rule applies for Don Siegelman as applied for anyone who goes into a courtroom. It should, anyway, right? And since both Ted Stevens and Don Siegelman are white men, then there shouldn't be too much of a problem here in doing for Siegelman the same thing that was done for Ted Stevens. As far as a new trial is concerned, you know, why dump that onto the Siegelman family, for God's sake, the cost. As far as Karl Rove, screw Karl Rove. He's an oinklet. You know, forget him. He doesn't exist. If he's called as a witness, he will be ordered by the judge or by the opposing attorneys. If Rove wants to drag somebody in that is not pertinent to the case, it won't happen. What's Rove going to do? Sit up there when he's questioned about the dirty tricks they used against Siegelman? Is he going to say, oh, by the way, Nancy Pelosi's got a boyfriend? I mean, come on. You know, the judge would look at him and say, shut up, Baldy. Just shut your damn mouth, little fuzzy-haired freak. So now, you know, I get the impression here that there might be an attitude out there that Democrats should be, I'm not saying they're not, afraid of Karl Rove. You know, he's another one. Somebody ought to take him off, sit him down, Karl Rove, in a nice little soundproof room and explain to him what a little bastard he is, and then say, now, we're going to give some enhanced interrogation to you. Now, we're going to lay you down on this board with your head down about 2 inches below your feet, and all we're going to do, Karl, is put a little water down your throat. It's no big deal, Karl! These people just make me furious, you know what I'm saying? So, why should anyone claim that justice will not be served in the Siegelman case because Democrats are afraid of Karl Rove? Maybe that's true. But if it is true, then again, let's pack it in. This is no longer a democratic republic. It is no longer a nation of laws. Not that we ever were, but, you know, we've been kind of drifting in that direction for the past 230 years. It was always on the books. It takes clawing up the steps of the Supreme Court to get a ruling, like Brown versus Board of Education, to get a ruling about Public Accommodations Act, to get a ruling that gay folk have the same right to get married, marriage is sanctioned by the state, as non-gay people. You know, you have to climb the steps. You have to beat on the doors of the Supreme Court. You have to beg your way in and prostrate yourself and lay down with your arms flung out and beg, you know, So, you know, when I say we're a nation of laws, I don't mean to make about what's the black population of America right now? What, 17%, 11%, 20%? I have no idea. I don't mean to make y'all laugh. You know, if you are African American and you listen to this white man sitting here going, well, you know, we've always had equal protection of the law. You know, that's a real knee slapper to black folks, and I understand that. So I'm just acknowledging I'm no fool. You know what I'm saying with that, right? Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it. All right. This is from Ed in Miami. Dear Mike, just want to take this opportunity to thank you for all the great laughs over the past years. I'm from Miami, Florida. I used to listen to you at 940 WINZ. WINZ will be switching to an all-sports format tomorrow, as you know. That was today, I guess. I'm deeply saddened, to say the least. Just to give you an idea of what a banana republic Miami is, a $500 million stadium has been approved to be built in the ghetto known as Little Havana. This area of town looks like the backdrop to Slumdog Millionaire. It's going to bring in 3,000 temporary jobs. Yeah, let's celebrate. I'll keep listening via the internet. Also, I'm going to save up to purchase an XM radio. It is going to take a while. I pay more for health insurance in a family of four since I live in Miami and other circumstances. Mike, I know you don't like people kissing your butt. However, I'm genuinely thankful to have had this brief period of time to listen to you, which has got me through some pretty dark days. Trying to keep it lit. One of your most devoted fans, Ed. That's a very, very kind email. Thank you, Ed.
Take this.
cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
And it is 10 before the hour. Did you sign up today for Malloy Podcasts? You did? All right, then you know that all you do is go to MikeMalloy.com. That's great. So you are going to get some 25 cent per show podcast of this program. I love it. Prairie 2 weighs in here. Subject line, don't need no book learning. If you don't know who he is the economic correspondent for our program. He also has a website, prairie2.com, prairie2.com. He writes tonight, new jobless numbers came out today, and of course they are worse than ever, and the corporate media, again, attaches the obligatory disclaimer that the experts are surprised. They need to get new experts. All this surprise must be killing them. Teachers' contracts are being issued by school boards across the country, and the new buzzword among the teaching staff is RIF, R-I-F, which stands for Reduction in Force. Between plunging real estate tax revenue and the slashing of aid from state governments, RIF, Reduction in Force, is the word to live by. You will be adding a lot of teachers to the unemployment ranks in the fall. In addition, a lot of teachers will avoid retirement with their pensions depleted, so contracts for new teachers will be in short supply. This is especially true in the red states, where public education was never a priority. States that rank near the bottom in aid per pupil have been cutting and cutting again to where it isn't even lunch money anymore. Why should they aid the schools? The red states are controlled by rich Republicans, and their kids never set foot in a public school. That's where the gardener's kid goes to school, and he doesn't need any of that book learning. You wouldn't want him reading the warning label on any of that pesticide he's been using on our gorgeous lawns without any, you know, safety equipment. So far, there is no real plan for creating jobs. Was it Ross Perot that said you can't have an economy from each of us giving the other guy a haircut? I've been letting mine grow. I'm the one who's shot the economy all to hell. Prairie 2. P.S. Take the job creation poll at prairie2.com. All right. Next break, I'll do it. You go do it now. You can do it now. You're listening via your computer. Go. prairie2.com. I mentioned this last night, and it was only a mention. I never got to it. House members are asking Barack Obama to rethink the Afghanistan surge. They're signing onto a letter, urging Obama to reconsider this plan. The letter says, in part, quote, Mr. President, in reviewing the past history of Afghanistan and the nations that have failed to conquer it, Russia spent 9 years in Afghanistan, lost many billions of dollars and more than 50,000 Russian soldiers. We urge you to reconsider the decision to send an additional 17,000 troops and to resist pressure to escalate even further. Now, that's a letter that has attracted the support of House Democratic Representative Neil Abercrombie of Hawaii, John Conyers in Michigan, Bob Filner and Mike Honda of California, Steve Kagan of Wisconsin, Marcy Kaptur and Dennis Kucinich of Ohio, and Jim McGovern of Massachusetts. And surprisingly, also signing the letter are Republicans Roscoe Bartlett of Maryland, Howard Coble and Walter Jones Jr. of North Carolina, John Duncan of Tennessee, Ron Paul of Texas, of course, and Ed Whitfield of Kentucky. That's it. Out of 535 members of the House and Senate combined, What is this? 10? 11? I wonder how far this will go. Now, in addition to the House members who signed on to the letter, it's also been endorsed by religious, political, and policy advocates from across the ideological spectrum. You can find this at thenation.com. John Nichols wrote about it the other day. Afghanistan, of course, is the I don't want to say tar baby for this administration, because somebody will say, oh, Malloy's getting racist, even though that is a well-known figure from American folklore. So what shall I call it? Flytrap? Well, that sounds demeaning of the president. Quicksand. Ah, there you go. Afghanistan is the quicksand into which Barack Obama seems unable to resist marching. Which I don't understand. He's got so many precedents that he can look at. So many leaders in this country who took us into these military adventures in the past 50 years that resulted in chaos, murder, mayhem, and always defeat. We've never had a declaration of war in this country since December 10th. 1941, what is that, 68 years ago. How many wars have we been involved in since then, since that last declaration of war? The Constitution has been absolutely shredded on this basis. We have War Powers Act. We have all sorts of stupid-ass little devices by which somebody in the executive branch can order troops, and then more troops, and then more troops, and then shame the Congress, or dare the Congress, into cutting off funds. This is a trick that Republicans usually use, but I think Democrats, notably Hillary Clinton, wasn't she on the Senate Armed Services Committee? I remember her using that phrase with quite a bit of flair. So this is Barack Obama's quicksand. What do you think? You think he's going to walk right into it and be swallowed? Yeah, me too. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Did you watch any of the coverage of Barack Obama in on his European walkabout in the UK, in France, in Germany? He's just knocking them dead, isn't he? Had a town hall meeting today in, where was he, in Cherbourg, France. He had French and German speakers there. His line or two in French sounded very authentic to me. It didn't sound like, mi casa es u casa, George Bush in his Spanish. Oh, my God. And I, again, say what one wants to about Barack Obama, and Lord knows I certainly say enough negative things about him. And, yeah, there's just, yeah, whatever, whatever. But if we step outside of the political thingy for just a second and take a look from a personality or you can examine Barack Obama's trip to Europe using any sort of, what's the current term, metric you choose. And all of a sudden, I don't know about you, but I started feeling, you know, you go, Barack. It just seems so different to have somebody represent the United States. You have this husband and wife team they tower over everybody that they've come up against, which is part of the fun of it. You know, to watch Sarkozy and Angela Merkel and even the Americans traveling along. You know, these people are lucky to make it up to Barack and Michelle's shoulder. And to see these tall, regal Americans. Oh, my God, Americans. And again, say what you will, and this is terribly sexist of me, but I swear to you, Michelle Obama, they had some video on this evening of she and the president going to some sort of not a state dinner, but a dinner, I believe, in Germany, and she was just knocked out, gorgeous. I mean, you watch her enter a room. Michelle Obama, and she's one of those people that when she enters a room, that's it. Every single bit of attention swings in her direction. One almost feels a little bit of, what's the word I'm looking for? Sorrow? No, it's not that. For the Sarkozy's wife. What's her name? Claudia? I'm drawing one of those.
Sorry, I wasn't listening.
You weren't listening. One of those huge blanks. And her claim to fame is she used to date Mick Jagger. And she's a recording star. And, you know, some other rock stars. You know what date means, of course. But, and then, and okay, so she is an attractive woman. And I don't know what her intellectual spectrum is. She might be a bloody genius. But we don't have to speculate about Michelle Obama. She has demonstrated over and over again this powerful presence. A, B, she is not the least bit intimidated by crowds or the spotlight or the press or you know, whatever she participates in with her husband. But to watch these two, whether they're with the Queen of England or the Prime Minister of the UK or the French President or the German Chancellor, is that what Merkel is? Is she the Chancellor? And it's just astounding. And I can't help it. You know, I sit here and criticize and question some of the policies, and I'm mightily disappointed in the direction that Obama seems to be going. But I don't know what his overall master plan is. Again, the guy's been in office for 60 days. In spite of all that, one has to admit, if one is willing to be honest, that when you watch them deal on the world stage, all of a sudden that horrible, sick, nauseous, disgusting feeling you used to have when Bush was on walkabout is gone. Because you know the Obamas are not going to commit some hideous faux pas. They are not going to say asinine, stupid, dumb, incomprehensible, partial sentences. If someone asks Barack Obama or Michelle Obama a two- or three-part question, it's going to be answered usually in the sequence in which it was asked. It's astonishing to see these two out there, whereas before there was George and Pickles. It's so again, regardless of what you may think of his political philosophy or where he's taking the country or which direction we're going, yada, 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 step out of that for just a second. And I think you'll agree, except Republicans. Republicans are scum. You know, I'm not even talking to Republicans. Get off my program. If you're listening, turn off the damn dial. I don't want you listening. What I talk about doesn't concern you. Go talk to your therapist. But normal Americans who are catching some of this video, you know, you can't help but feel a sense of real pride. And you know what else? Come on now. Come on. What a lot of white people are feeling, they're feeling extra pride because they're saying when the Obamas are out there wowing the world. You know, a lot of white people in this country who voted for Barack Obama is saying, see, we're not racist. See, we did it. See, come on. You know you are. You know you are. There's something about that, right? Here's this gorgeous black couple. or gorgeous couple that happens to be black. And he may be a Nazi. He's been in office 2 months. I'm just saying. He's got the office of the presidency. She has the position of first lady. And the world is looking at this going, And most Americans are too. So on that basis, I'm glad he's out there. I'm glad he is. And what's funny to me, I don't know why it's funny, but it is kind of funny. After what Angela Merkel had to put up with this drunk, coked out frat boy who used to be president of the United States, who comes up behind her and grabs her shoulders. Hey, baby. Jesus God. After that, I'm not surprised that Merkel was a little bit, on guard about a diplomat or a representative of the United States, especially if it happens to be the president. So Barack Obama, of course, being a gentleman, being understanding how to communicate verbally, non-verbally, of course he doesn't touch her. I mean, Jesus God, why would he? So what I've noticed about Merkel is she just simply can't take her eyes off this couple, off the Obamas. Every piece of video I've seen where they're in it together. And no, I don't know why I'm going on and on about this. If it's bugging you, I understand. I'm almost finished. But I haven't seen a piece of video yet where Merkel, if she's in the same clip as the Obamas, where she's not just straining to get a picture of him. And am I right? Did I read someplace that some of these other heads of state or whatever they are at this G20 were asking Barack Obama for his autograph? is that true? Did that really happen? Can I have your autograph? Wow. So, again, say what you will, but even you diehard left-wingers, you lefties, you people out there beyond where I am, bless your hearts, when you watch this couple out there, you're feeling a sense of something that is 180 degrees from what you used to feel when Bush was out there. They're attractive. They're articulate. The world is being wowed by them, and you're happy that that's happening. You are. Me too. We'll be back. We're going to take some phone calls, so open the lines here in a moment. The number is 877-99-MALLOY.
I want you, I want you, I want you. I think you know by now. I'll get to you somehow. Until I do, I'm telling you so you'll understand. Michelle, Pavel, son de mon qui vont très bien.
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. A couple of quick emails here. This is from Iba Music? Can't y'all just put like a name at the bottom? It doesn't have to be your real name. Can't just put Spike or something. Anyway, this is regarding Obama's war. Iba Music writes, Mike, to better understand Obama's headlong rush into disaster in Afghanistan, remember that he works for the oligarchs who direct him and what policies he is to pursue. He is the highest paid and most powerful employee of theirs. And he was picked for his ability and willingness to follow their orders. I also am a supporter of his, but I also always remember the big picture. He is in power primarily to carry out their orders and wishes. First the British and the Russians, and now we are in Afghanistan to corral whatever strategic resources they covet, probably the world's largest yielding poppy fields, to fund off-the-shelf, unbudgeted secret projects worldwide. You really think that? I waffle back and forth. I don't know what kind of a briefing new presidents are given after they win the election, before they're sworn in. I'm sure there must be a moment. I'm not sure. I fantasize that there is a moment when the president-elect is invited to a meeting, and there may be 15 or 20 people in the room, and a discussion is held. And when the president-elect, whoever he is, comes out of that meeting, he has a whole new understanding of what the presidency really is about. Now that's the weird fantasy. The reality to me is, you know, bad squeeze. You know, he's not being dictated to by anyone. He happens to be, he being everybody except George W. Bush. He, the president, happens to be somebody that has an agenda. They want to see it to fruition. They want to make it happen. They're politically ambitious. They have immensely powerful egos in order to assume that they can lead this country. And given that powerful ego, again, with the exception of Bush was just a little punk. But given that powerful ego, I find it hard to think that the president-elect would be taken into a room prior to his assuming office. I'm speaking metaphorically, of course, and told, you know, what the real deal is. I just, you know, and I don't think it occurs over a period of time. Unless, you know, like I've said before, unless the tinfoil hat people are right. You know, the Trilateral Commission and the, and what are some of these other ones? The Club of Rome and the Weasel Beasels. I don't know. The Masons. I have no idea. Maybe they do get him in the basement, the president, and say, you know, start chanting around him and speaking in Latin and Greek and, you know, telling him, that he has to behave or they're going to beat him with T-squares and, those old high school compasses with the points on the ends. You know, I have no idea. I just don't think of Barack Obama. I think if somebody said that to Obama, he would just look at him and you know, just say, get out of my face, man. Just go away. Or he'd call the Secret Service, unless the Secret Service is in on it. Maybe they're in on it. Shut up, Brock. Sit down and listen to what these guys are saying. Huh? Sit down. I don't know. I have no idea. And Irish Dave says, Mike, why am I regarding the fact that Barack Obama is taller than these other so-called leaders? Irish Dave writes, Mike, why am I reminded of Fidel's response to Baba Wawa's question of what does it take to be a successful revolutionary? I remember that Barbara Walters asked Fidel Castro, how do you become a successful revolutionary? Castro didn't wait for a translation. And laughingly said, quote, it helps to be taller than everybody else, end quote. Yeah, I'd forgotten that, if I ever knew that. I just know that she asked him dumbass questions. So that was Castro's answer. You have to be taller, or it helps if you're taller than everybody else, right? All right, AJ, I can say hi to you, and then we have to go to a break. All right?
That's fine.
Okay.
So what... do you want me to hold on, or do you?
Yeah, yeah, I want you.
I can do that.
All right, yeah, I want you to hold on while we go to a break, and then we'll come back and chat. Okay?
No problem.
All right, let me put you back on hold. Yeah, we do. We have to take a break, so we'll do that. We'll come back. We'll talk with AJ, the Music Factory, who lives in upstate New York, not far from the madness that occurred up there today. And if you'd like to join in the pillow fight tonight. Bring it on. 800 or 877-99 Malloy. We'll be right back.
On holiday,
not ready to make nice. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. We had just put AJ on the phone and said, hold on. AJ, the Music Factory, calling from the Catskills. Hey, AJ.
Hey, handsome. How are you tonight?
Getting by.
Good, good. We live in the Susquehanna River region of the Catskills, about 50 minutes away from Binghamton.
Right.
So I'm not going to pretend that we are directly affected by it, but it's one of those cases where, you know, it's close enough that it gives you the shivers.
Yeah.
And it was just a couple of weeks ago that I told Liza that, you know, it's ridiculous. I've sort of internalized this idea that, you know, someday it could happen that the police are going to come to one of us and say, your spouse has been shot in some mass shooting, you know? And here it is just 50 minutes away. And I listened to the vice president and the governor.
Uh-huh.
Both men who I don't have particular contempt for. That's kind of new. And I listened to them today, you know, talk about the tragedy, and then, you know, both of them offered prayers.
Right.
And, you know, with all due respect to the offices, you can keep your goddamn prayers. There are people who woke up this morning who were the most ordinary of ordinary citizens. These are not soldiers. They don't live on the battlefield every day.
Right.
And their lives, the lives of their families are never going to be the same.
No.
And when Liza came home from work, I hugged her tight. And I said, you know, Wayne LaPierre once again picked up a gun, stuck it to the head of the American people, and pulled the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And I am just so fed up with this. And I told you the last time I spoke to you that I hadn't called you in a while because after Obama won, I sort of like took a political vacation. And for me, that vacation is officially over today. I am back to actively hating these people and what they do. If you have a car, you have a license to drive, but you can't go 70 miles an hour down a street in a residential area. You cannot take a bus or a truck on the parkway. There's all sorts of regulations for driving, and yet simple regulations that would prevent this. I've never been a proponent of completely taking away guns, not
right.
for the militia reason. Just, you know, I'm okay with them. I'm okay with hunting and everything. I personally don't do it, but I don't have any problem with anyone else doing it. But damn it, some regulation so that this is at least minimized. But no.
Yeah, yeah.
They're petty little make-believe rights. You know, what they really have is a gun lobby that's mm-hmm. making tons of money off of it. It's blood money, Mike. It's blood money.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And I get to be, I and everybody in the country, and particularly those in the immediate area tonight, once again, we get to be nauseated, just you know, rushing to our bathrooms and throwing up from the disgust. I'm beyond words.
I hear you. I hear you, AJ. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago it was Alabama, and a couple
yeah.
of weeks ago it was North Carolina. And then there was that shooting in Illinois where the guy goes into a church and opens fire on the minister and a couple of the parishioners. I think he had a knife and started hacking. I know it's.
Well, I was kind of hoping that the North Carolina shooting might have been one step over the line because it was all elderly, and I would have expected at that point the Republican thug politicians to stand up and say, this is it. We've got to do something.
Yeah.
And you spoke about this. I don't know which shooting, because now I'm losing track myself. But after one of the shootings, you were talking about how it's just never going to happen. You know, it happens again and again and again, and nothing changes. And thank you, Vice President Biden, and thank you, Governor Patterson. But where has the legislation been? You know, Biden was a senator since God was a corporal. And, you know, today he stood there and said something's got to be done. But I don't remember him putting together a bill. I don't remember anyone putting together a bill to fight this.
I know.
There's a certain amount of, like, oh, boy, you know, we dodged a bullet, literally, because now you know, what are the odds that it's going to come in this direction? Now it's probably going to be somewhere, you know, out in some other direction, like when hurricanes hit. First it hits there, and then it hits far away. And but, Jesus, this is madness. And our president is in Europe and gets to look at the world leaders and say, oh, you know, sorry, I got to go make a phone call. My barbaric country shot up its citizens again.
Yeah.
And these are the same thugs who keep saying, number one, we're number one, we're number one. Well, tonight we are. Mm-hmm. We are. We are number one in barbarism, Mike.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you, AJ. All
thanks
right.
For your good work.
All right, man. Thanks. Please. Thanks a lot for checking in. Thanks, AJ. Yeah, there is no. I've never understood the power, and the power seems to be all-encompassing, total, of two lobbies in this country: the Israel lobby and the gun lobby. I've never seen two organizations, AIPAC and the NRA, that invariably, without exception, get exactly what they demand from 535 members of Congress. 535 members of Congress who, in one form or another, agree to every single non-negotiable demand. Not compromise, not let's talk, demand of the NRA and the Israel lobby. Those two. I mean, even the anti-abortion crowd doesn't have that clout. Even the anti-gay marriage crowd doesn't have that clout. There are only two that have this kind of power: the Israel lobby and the NRA lobby. One domestic policy and the other one foreign policy. Both involved in censorship. There is to be no discussion about the crimes committed by this nation state in the Middle East. There is to be no discussion about the slaughter of people in this country because of high-powered weapons. And consequently, there is no discussion. It just is not discussed. Mainstream media will not touch either issue except where it concerns the slaughters. The television people will breathlessly cover it because this is what they live for, this sort of thing. They don't live for bank failures and economic problems. Television lives for massive disaster, especially cable news television. That is their lifeblood. Without it, they disappear. So when these events do occur, they're over it like white on rice. They're all over it. And in the process of reporting, I watched CNN today and listened on Sirius for 5 hours today. The coverage that this story got, and it's the same every single time. It's so bizarre to listen to certain words and phrases from militaristic law enforcement that have crept into the vocabulary of these anchor people, the presenters, as they're called. In the UK and in Australia, I believe, people who do the news are called presenters. Well, these presenters who try to patch things together while keeping a breathless rat-a-tat-tat going so that you don't dare leave your television. If, murder and mayhem and chaos and death and destruction turns you on, and let's face it, we're Americans, man. We love that stuff, right? No, I know you don't. Neither do I. But we're Americans. We love that stuff. So the NRA doesn't give a goddamn about anything except its unexplainable, deranged love of weaponry. I am a gun owner. You betcha I am. I am also licensed, fingerprinted, and photographed gun owner. Now, part of that is because I carry a weapon, but I have no problem with the photographing and the fingerprinting and the license renewal and the questionnaire and a quick examination of my medical history to see if I'm crazy. All of this stuff. I have no problem with that whatsoever. Here in Georgia, the gun nut people got very pissed off because the state legislature refused to let them take their goddamn guns into the Atlanta airport. You can take them just about any place else. You can take them into shopping malls, into schools, or not schools yet. They're lobbying for that, too. Churches, gas stations, public toilets, urinals, libraries. So when this effed up legislature of ours said, well, no, not in the airport, you know, the gun people went nuts. I hate it, AJ. I hate it. And I hate the fact that we are so immature in this country that we don't understand how desperately we need legislation. Well, what's the point in talking about it, right?
Arm yourself with the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Andre writes in regarding the shooting today in Binghamton, New York. And I just... You know, so many times when that happens since I've been in this business, talk radio business, there's nothing to say. I feel like AJ, I just get a profound feeling of grief for what the families of these victims have to experience, whether it's in a nursing home or the way it was in Alabama the other day with this berserk man running from town to town shooting people, or what happened today. Just a profound sense of grief. It just kind of washes over me, just like when I see, and I'm sure you're probably the same way, right? I see these graveside services for soldiers who have come back from Iraq in a coffin, and, you know, as a young wife and a couple of kids sitting there just stunned, and the officer presents the flag that was on the coffin, you know, a gift from a grateful nation. And I just, you know, I literally get a wave of nausea that just rolls over me. I just think, you know, how can lives be so wasted like that? So I guess it was Columbine. We were in Chicago then, weren't we, Kathy, during the Columbine shooting. And after that, I just can't do it anymore. I mean, I realize in saying all this, I'm doing it, but we used to have whole programs that would, the whole 3 hours would just be, you know, talking about the shooting. And, you know, I'd get the right wing crazies who would call in and, you know, just, I could never understand their position in the wake of a bloodbath like what occurred today. Their position being, you know, guns don't kill people, irresponsible people kill people. And, you know, that is such a worn out, stupid ass position to take on this. It's not even worth talking about. But I gave up on it because I know it happens. And like AJ, every time Kathy and Molly leave, to go somewhere, you know, I'm a worrier. I think about the traffic in Metro Atlanta because it's horrifying. But like AJ, you know, sometimes I think, you know, what? How would I react if my wife, my little girl, were caught in a shopping mall or a bus terminal or a subway terminal or something where there was a nutcase with a gun who was shooting people? You know, what would I do? And I come up with the half-witted reaction answers, you know, the fight or flight answers that come from the reptilian part of my brain. And, you know, which is to rush in and, you know, of course I'd be stopped at a police line. But, you know, if it's your spouse, I don't care if you're a man or a woman, if it's your spouse or your kid who are caught in something like that, you have a visceral reaction that's almost impossible to contain. You know it. I know it. But I worry about that. I worry about that about my adult children. You know, what if they are someplace? This is not anything I ever worried about until I don't know. Even the Charles Whitman assault from the University of Texas Tower. When was that? That was a million years ago, wasn't it? Sometime in the early 60s. And I remember thinking that wasn't that the first one in modern times, the first one that what he killed, 17, 18, 19 people from the Texas Tower, University of Texas Tower. But from that point up to now, you know, all these years, 40 some years, think about how many of these mass killers have just picked up weapons, armed themselves. And now, of course, they don't arm themselves with a, you know, 30 caliber deer rifle or something and a couple of handguns. No. You know, that's so last century, right? Andre writes, Mike, the chickens sadly are coming home to roost on our society. All this anger we feel won't be directed at the people causing the problems, but on each other. Nonstop violence is our foreign policy. Shrinking jobs, salaries, education, living conditions, debt, on and on. People are just snapping. You know, Dennis Kucinich, thanks, Andre. Andre, Dennis Kucinich talked about a Department of Peace had he been elected president. And, you know, of course, the right-wing zombie people just had a field day with that, you know, mocking him and laughing. Can you imagine, though, if we taught our children kind of a Quaker, like the American Friends, that Quaker thing I'm talking about. I have a bumper sticker on my pickup truck, that one that says, war is not the answer. It's put out by the Friends Congressional Lobbying Organization. War is not the answer. Can you imagine if, and I've got a friend who's an art teacher or a drama teacher at a Quaker school in Atlanta. And can you imagine if all of our children were taught peace, if we didn't have military presence in 140 countries, can you believe that? I mean, doesn't that make you just kind of stop for a second? If we taught our children literally about sharing, you know, with a 4.5 year old at my age, it's amazing. I go to the playgrounds and I'm older than the other parents by a generation. I go to school meetings. I go to events, Molly's recitals or whatever. And, you know, I'm always, so many times people say, oh, your granddaughter is just lovely. You know, so I'm so used to that. But I look at the parents that say to their children, you know, now, Monica, share. You've got to share. Give that toy back to Lance. You have to share. And I think, when does that stop? When do we stop teaching our people to share? When do we make the change from share to grab all you can get your hands on? And it's the grab all you can get your hands on part that results in our having a military presence in 140 countries. You know what I'm saying? And it's the grab all you can get your hands on that leaves us vulnerable to crazy organizations like the gun lobby. We'll be back after this break. If you're on the line, stay with us. I'm going to get your call. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is about 7 past the hour. Tom in Minneapolis sends from his iPhone a message here that Michelle Bachmann is, who is a representative, of course, from Minnesota. Michelle Bachmann has been advocating violence, and she has. There are so many of these right-wingers who actually advocate gun violence. I talk about taking right-wingers off into the woods and blistering their asses for them, but I think it's a little bit different from what Bachmann and some of these other people on the right are so quick to suggest, you know, that we're under siege, that, you know, the decent people in this country have to participate in a revolution that has nothing to do with constitutional guarantees, has nothing to do with what the original, you know, a revolution is usually what happens when you are oppressed. Michelle Bachmann, being a white woman in the U.S. Congress, and a well-off white woman in the U.S. Congress, is probably better positioned than billion, not probably, is better positioned than billions upon billions of people on this earth. This woman has about as much room to bitch about anything as I mean, she has no reason to complain about anything. She's an instigator. She's a freak, and I don't know why people in her district send her to Washington. Maybe for the geek value. I have no idea. But she is one of those advocates of violence. And Prairie 2 sent in a P.S. He says, you can take note that almost every one of these shooting sprees that the shooter had recently lost his job. Canada doesn't have this problem, despite more guns per capita, because if you lose your job there, it's not the end of the world. Here we have a policy of making everybody scared to death all the time. No health care, no union to protect you from the bullies, overwhelming debt, your whole industry being outsourced, on and on. I'm surprised, Prairie 2 writes, there aren't more of these. What do you suppose will happen tomorrow? Yeah, that's that, you know, Michael Moore pointed that out in, was it Bowling for Columbine? That per capita gun ownership in Canada is greater than here. And yeah, the reason that it's not that the Canadians are different from us, I don't think, in the sense of what percentage of that population is wacko as a percentage of this population. I mean, you know, people with mental problems, I guess I shouldn't say wacko, that's not politically correct. People with mental problems, especially in English-speaking countries that have essentially, don't send me emails and tell me I'm crazy, essentially the same history, same geographic, the longest unprotected border on earth is the United States and Canada. Canada is our provides us with more oil than Saudi Arabia. I mean, just on and on. There's not a whole lot of difference. I'm sorry, Canadians. There, except in foreign policy, there's not a lot of difference between Canadians and Americans in culture, in outlook, in you know, all that stuff. Come on, you know what I mean. Don't flood me with emails from Canada now telling me, hey, we don't want any part of. You know what I'm saying? Damn it. And as Michael Moore pointed out, you don't, this doesn't happen. And the reason is Prairie 2 says, it reaffirms, yes, we have people going berserk in this country. Because, did you see that video the other night? They played it and played it and played it. The white guy, in his mid-30s, walks into a convenience store with his little girl, his 7 or 8 year old daughter, and pulls what it looked like a police service revolver, is a massive weapon. He pulls it out and robs the clerk with his kids hand there. And they had it, you know, they captured the audio, and he's saying, I'm out of work. I've got to take care of my daughter. Well, obviously that's not the way to do it, but you know, desperation. What are you going to do? What do you do? We live in a country that will kick your ass to the curb. As just so quick, If you want anything, any kind of, any little bit of the social safety net in this society, in the United States, you have got to jump through more hoops. You have got to do more backflips until finally, and the system is set up this way since it's been under assault for the past 50 years by Republicans, by conservatives. The system's set up to make you do backflips until you give up, until you say to hell with it. And then a certain percentage of us, after we say the hell with it, will pick up a gun and go decide to kill innocent people. Not decide. That's not a that's not a decision. It's a crazed reaction. I honestly don't believe there are any thought processes that go into that. I'm not talking about two teenagers who decide to go nuts inside a school and start shooting their classmates. You know what I'm referring to. It's astonishing. Astonishing. All right. Where are we? Here we are. Bob is in Clifton, Tennessee, listening on XM. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Mike. I'm calling to praise Prairie 2. This week, you mentioned that you had some people who didn't appreciate his work, but I certainly do.
Uh-huh.
I would like to clarify one thing, though. Out here in the hills in Tennessee, we do a lot of canning.
Yeah.
Prairie 2 is often saying, buy canned goods.
Right.
But this is an old term. When we can, we use jars.
Right.
And people should know that any acid food, like pasta sauce,
right,
fruit, tomatoes, those things will attack a can.
Right.
So if you're going to buy that and stock it up, best do it in glass jars.
Okay.
Okay, and I would like Prairie, too, to give us...
Bob, when he's talking about canned goods, he's talking about the stuff you buy in the store.
I understand.
Oh, okay.
But if you're going to buy something that's high acid, you need to buy it in glass.
Well, okay, gotcha.
Okay. But I would like him to give us some information on holding corporations, holding companies.
Uh-huh.
It's my contention the insurance companies are running the show here.
Yeah.
You know, Mike, if a dozen people went out to homestead somewhere in the old days, and the barn burned down, all the neighbors came together to rebuild it.
Right.
And everyone depended on one another. And it was an insurance salesman who I believe is the first to destroy community. Because he comes and sells a policy to one person.
Mm-hmm.
And then that person has the attitude, well, I paid my premium, you should have paid yours.
Right, right.
So I'm not going to help you rebuild your barn. So I'd like to hear about these insurance companies which are behind these behemoths that are oppressing us.
Well, yeah, they certainly are there. And I don't know, Bob, I don't know if I have the expertise to, or not the expertise, but the knowledge. I'd have to do a lot of research. I just remember, when I was young and first married, 100 years ago, back in the early '60s, and a student at the same time, and every time the doorbell rang or the phone rang, it was somebody trying to sell life insurance to me and my 18-year-old wife, and 18-year-old pregnant wife, and it was just I came to just hate them. I don't have any grudge against insurance people now. I guess the reason I hated them is because I didn't have any money to buy policies, and they were scaring the hell out of me. And with this AIG thing exploded, and they peel back the coverings on AIG, and you see this mass of squirming maggots and dead things, and the stench is overpowering, and you think, this is the insurance business? Oh my God.
I gotta go. You don't know how it feels to be me.
bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
All right, not a lullaby. 21 past the hour. Back to your phone call here in just a phone calls in just a second. We have one open line, so grab it. 877-99-MALLOY. This is from Kay in San Francisco. She writes, Mike, on last night's program, you again raised the question of how high school civics teachers can cover the principles of American government while knowing that members of the Bush crime family have not been held accountable and very likely never will be, thanks to the likes of Patrick Leahy, John Conyers, and other congressional Democrats who are in a position to at least get the ball rolling. I've gotten to the point, Kay writes, over the past 8 years, where I have detached from the subject matter, sort of like what they teach in Al-Anon, detachment. I feel that I am now teaching political theory rather than actual government. Kay is a high school teacher. Maybe someday we will again become a nation of laws rather than men, but for now I see the Constitution as a blueprint or a wish list. It makes me sad to think that this is how far we've strayed so far from the path of trying to achieve those lofty goals set out by the founders. We've been making some real progress, but the past 8 years were a major detour right into a ditch. Kay, in San Francisco. Yeah, that's, I sort of thought when I asked that question last night, that Kay, if Kay were listening, she would respond since she does teach. I don't know how instructors do it, either a high school or a university level. I have no idea, especially not middle school. What do you tell kids? Do we think that the kids are not tuned in, that they're just focused on, music and drugs, sex and rock and, well, not rock and roll, drug, sex and rap? They're not. They pick up on it. Trust me. As a matter of fact, that makes me believe that we should schedule another youth night at some point here, Kathy, and just have kids calling in. DeMarcus is calling from New Jersey, listening on Sirius. DeMarcus, welcome to the program.
Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing all right, I guess. About as good as can be expected.
All right.
This thing we are going on with Barack Obama is such a sham, and this G20 cover story they put down here is a bunch of crap, and we all know it. The epicenter of all the troubles in the world is that Bank of England, that Rothschild dynasty, crime family dynasty, Illuminati, bunch of bourbon. And we all know this. Why are we playing around with it? Them young kids over there, that's why they're raising all their hell out there in front of the bank. Because everybody's getting hip to the game. And one other thing, just for me, as far as I can tell, you know, it's incumbent on all of us to understand who Barack Obama really is. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we really understand, but when that thing came out with him being related to Bush and Cheney, that should have shook the whole world's foundation.
Yeah, but you know, DeMarcus, if we check all the cross connections and so on and so forth, we're going to come up with most people in this country can. If you go back far enough, you're going to find a link. I mean, hell, you and I are related somewhere. You know.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
You're my brother.
No. I mean, if you go back far enough. So saying that because Obama was related to Cheney, if you go back far enough, sure. But I wouldn't put that on him. I just think he.
No, but Mike, here's the point I'm trying to make.
All right.
They come off phony, like when Kerry and Bush ran, they was cousins and the Skull and Bones, and they related
right.
to England and Philip and that bad Duke of Edinburgh.
Right.
And like I said, then Duke and Mountbatten families changed their German name to Mountbatten from Battenberg. We all know the scam.
Right.
You know, they're related to the Rothschild family. So if Bush and Obama are related, then that wasn't nothing but a convenient family meeting and a cover. He got Red to riot at on this Afghanistan push to escalate this war, and we all know that. We need to grow up, stop playing games, and bring it. I'm a major league pitcher, Mike. You know that. I throw a pork chop past a wolf. Okay? I'm trying to play these little silly child games.
I hear, DeMarcus, I hear you, but I'll tell you.
You know I love you, Mike. You know I love you too, Mike.
I know you do, DeMarcus.
I know you're a smart brother. Come on.
I didn't know you were a pitcher, though. What was that you throw a pork chop past a wolf? DeMarcus, I gotta go.
All right, bro.
I'll talk to you later. Yeah, he's a pitcher. I know. I mean, I hear that. Sometimes I think to myself, you know, we're all playing a game, kind of, sort of. Right? I mean, we kind of sort of are, because most of us do understand, you know, who's behind the curtain. We may not be able to recognize that person if the curtain comes back, but we know somebody's there. You know, the Wizard of Oz was not... It was not all fantasy. I mean, it was allegory. You understand what I'm saying? Wizard of Oz, and think about the time when it was written. Well, you know. DeMarcus, thanks for checking in. We'll be right back, y'all. Stay with us. Don't go away. We got two open lines now. I'm pissing you off? What's up here? 877-99-MALLOY. Come on, bring it on.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. And we shall go back to your phone calls here. Lance is calling from Southern Indiana, listening on Sirius. Lance, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. I mean, it saddens me every time I hear about these shootings. I mean, it's hard to take that. But you know, I've been listening here, and I just kind of curious what solutions would you propose to stop this? Have every one of us turn our guns in, or I mean?
No, if you listen to this program, you know I've never suggested that. If you listen to this program, you know I'm a licensed gun owner. If you listen to this program, you know I carry a weapon. If you listen to this program, you'd know perfectly my position. And my position is simply, where it concerns gun ownership, first of all, there's got to be heavy duty licensing. Secondly, we've got to make sure that we as a society, not a government, I'm talking about down on the state and county level, that we as a society understand that if we put military-style weapons in people's hands, we are acting like dumbasses. That's A, B, and C. D, which actually should be A, is that we should have a society where, like this was brought up tonight, and Michael Moore brought it up in Bowling for Columbine, a society where there is a safety net, where when people do lose their jobs or desperately need some kind of counseling, they come home and find their spouses left them, or they find out that something bad has happened to their kid and they got no place to turn. The goddamn churches still sure don't do anything for people. So we don't have a social safety net in this country that's adequate to the needs of the kind of society that we have, where people have no value whatsoever. The only thing that has value in this country is the military-industrialist establishment, is corporate America. The average Joe doesn't have an ice cube's chance in hell, and every average Joe understands that. If we lived in a society where there was a system at hand where we knew that if we got into dire straits, that we wouldn't lose everything. We wouldn't lose our position, our home, our job, whatever. I think we'd be a lot better. So it's not just guns. Guns are, you have to look at the greater context of this country. A lot of societies own guns and don't have anything near the kind of blood on the streets that we do. And one of the reasons is that they have a rational licensing program. They are not paranoid the way it seems like every single NRA member I have ever run into is a scared little boy who is just terrified that the big bad government is going to come and take his gun away. And there's never been a gun grab in this country except after Katrina, and that was perpetrated by these private semi-military freaks named Blackwater who were sicked on the American public by George Bush. So I don't get if you are identifying yourself as a right winger who wants to challenge me on this issue, I don't get where you're coming from. I've never understood where the NRA true believers come from. Nobody wants your goddamn gun. I don't want it. The government doesn't want it. What they want is responsible ownership. A society where people don't go berserk and dress up in military style fatigues and pretend and lose their minds and pretend like they're in some Rambo movie and go kill innocent people. That's all. Jesus. What's so hard about that?
Everything you said sounds great, but
every time an effort is made to bring that into play, the NRA types, walk around like they have a stick up their hind ends and gritting their teeth and saying, no, we don't want any of that. You show me an NRA guy and I will show you somebody who is anti-woman. I'll show you somebody who doesn't believe in social safety net services. I'll show you somebody who will vote Republican even though the Republicans will cut your throat and laugh while you bleed. That's why it pisses me off. I used to be a member of the NRA. I've said this a million times until the leadership went nuts. And that was about 25 or 30 years ago. I would no more participate in these psychopaths than fly to the moon. By the same token, every 2 years, I will march my ass into the DeKalb County Police Department down here in Georgia, and I will renew my permit, and I will carry that weapon because I know that there are people out there who just might try to do what we're talking about. Now, that's all I got to say on it, Lance. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. I've said it a million times. Somebody, don't call me and ask me what my solution is. Because my solution would be to go way back to the beginning and build a society where these filthy weapons are not needed. My solution would be to eliminate the need for people to threaten my life, like happened so many times during the 90s that I finally got advised, get a permit. And I was advised by the police. So it has nothing to do with guns. It has to do with the insanity. I wasn't threatened by communists. I wasn't threatened by socialists. I wasn't threatened by atheists. I wasn't threatened by Democrats or liberals. I was threatened by a bunch of goddamn monkey-headed right-wing Christian freakoids who didn't like the fact that I was talking against Ronald Reagan's murder policies in Central America. I've never been, Jesus. You know who I carry a weapon to guard myself against? NRA types. Christian freaks. People that would deny women the right to privacy. So that if I want to pick up a sign and say women have a right to abortion if that's what they want, one of these jackasses is going to step out from behind a tree and try to shoot me? Aha! In a pig's ass, pal. All right. Now, have I got it said? I'm sorry. I get very angry about this. Kathy won't touch a gun. Kathy hates guns. I had to force her to learn how to not force. You can't force somebody you're married to do anything. But I don't like this. I hate it. I hate having these things in my house. I hate putting on a holster. I hate carrying it in my car. I hate it. But I also know that there are sons of bitches out there who would attempt to harm me or my family and wouldn't even think about it because they're goddamn crazy people. Okay, I'm sorry. You were going to say something. Jesus. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I remember, when I used to listen to you long, long, long before I ever met you, when I was your fan/stalker, And I would listen to you on the radio here in Atlanta, and there were no liberals on the radio anywhere. I mean, this was years ago. There was, you didn't hear liberals, and I can remember some of these people calling you up. I just remember this, and they would say, well, Mike, it sounds like you don't like Ronald Reagan.
What?
And it was hilarious because up until that point, the only voice you heard on talk radio was conservative talk radio. You never heard an opposition.
Right.
So it was just so funny. And no wonder you had to go get a gun. They all wanted to kill you.
I used to get the death threats on the air. On the air. That's how crazy these sons of bitches. Down here, there's a place down here, Kennesaw, Georgia, where about 25 years ago, they passed an ordinance that said every head of household had to own a gun. I don't know if it was ever enforced or not. But Kennesaw is where that jerk ass that had the little... What's the little cartoon that Molly watches? Curious George. It was in Kennesaw. Wasn't it Kennesaw? That dumb bastard had, I mean, you got to Kennesaw. You're a black man. You got to Kennesaw. And you really want to, upset the natives out there. Just go out there and act like a normal human being and watch them go berserk, the white people. They'll just go, this is still Georgia. I don't give a damn if it's 2009. It can be 2109.
Well, see, that's hallowed ground for the South because there was that important Civil War battle that was fought there. So if you're in Kennesaw, that's sacred. That's the blood of patriots. South gonna do it again.
Oh, Jesus. Now, this is one of the reasons I don't bring up these mass killings. I mean, what's the point? It'll happen again and again and again and again and again. Long after I'm dead and gone, it'll still be happening. 100 years from now, it'll still be happening. You watch. Unless this society ever comes to grips with the violence. We are a violent society. Our foreign policy is based on violence. Barack Obama is out there being this charming, incredibly a warm human being, and you know as well as I do that he represents a nation whose primary directive is kill. Kill, loot, pillage, take. You don't believe that? Then let me ask you something. Does Cuba have a military presence in 140 countries? No. Does Russia? No. Does China? No. Go ahead, pick one. Go ahead. There's one country on earth that has a military presence in 140 countries, and it's us. And why do we have it there? Why do we have them there? This is a violent society.
Blow something up. That's what bombs were made for, so you could blow stuff up. Come on, let's roll. Let's blow something up. Blow something up. Blow something up. That's what bombs were made for, so you could blow stuff up. Come on, let's roll. Let's blow something up. When all else fails, let's blow something
up. I'm from a land of cotton. Hard times there are now forgotten. Look away. Look away. Dixieland, the rains were falling. Families lost, people calling. Look away, look away, look away from Dixieland. Look away. Look away.
It's about 9 before the hour. I don't know. I just felt like playing that. It's a pretty song. Yeah, that's right. 9 before the hour. Thanks to our crew all week and tonight. Kathy Bay, who produces and engineers this program. And it has been a very strange week living with a radio engineer producer. We're still married. I'm shocked. We got through the first week of the official existence of this program, and we're still married. Whew, wow. So thanks to Kathy. Ben Birch, who is our technical advisor and also is doing yeoman work trying to help us get this podcast thing working and taking care of the subscriptions that are coming in. And we do invite you to become a subscriber to the Molloy podcasting and other stuff that we're going to have up on the website. If you've been to the website, you know we're not kidding you. This is for real. This is the real deal. And the subscriptions will cost you 25 cents. Is that right? Yeah, 25 cents a program. Buck and a quarter a week.
And they're commercial free.
Oh,
you keep forgetting. That's the most important part. They're commercial free podcasts.
Right. Okay.
No commercials. And there's no middleman. There's no network.
Well, that's true. This is not going to Nova M or Air America or whatever or ABC. This comes right to the Molloy Show company to make sure that we stay on the air. I've said this a couple of times, so I'm sure you're tired of it, but this is strictly us now, Kathy and me and you. That's it. There's nobody else that is providing a penny into this. We are, and you are. And the way you can do it is to subscribe to the Molloy podcast. That's all. It's a buck and a quarter a week. It's what it works out to, which is 25 cents a program. I don't know why that always tickles me. I always laugh about it. 25 cents a program. Because a lot of people say you're a two-bit punk. That's why. All right. That's okay. I mean, that's okay. You know, two-bit punk. All right. Two-bit liberal talk show host. You're damn right. So get your quarters in. Will you do that for me? Go to MikeMolloy.com. Take a look, and then figure out how to. I think it's still a little bumpy. I wish we had a link up there where you clicked on it. I want to be a member. Click, and it just reached into your wallet and got your credit card. But it does. There is a couple of steps.
I'm sure Ashcroft had that in the works before he stepped down.
I'm sure he did. Anyway, thanks to Kathy Bay, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, and you. We appreciate your support this week. Really do. And the best way to make sure that we stay with you through this, I have no idea what's going to happen. Neither do you. This president is 2 months into his first term, and we don't know what's going to happen. But I honestly believe that we need to be in touch here. I realize there are other programs out there, and some good ones on the left side of the spectrum. They really are, the liberal side of the spectrum. But I think you get something from this program if you're a regular that the other ones, bless their hearts, don't provide. It's just different from the other programs. So we want you to support it. And the way you can do that is not, don't send us a check. Don't, you know, collect, have a bake sale and send us some money. Just subscribe to the podcasts and the videos that are going to be offered. And the videos are going to be bizarro. I just have a feeling. And the reason is we don't have to answer to anyone anymore. We can do whatever we damn well please. So just stay with us. You know, and I say that, stay with us. I mean that. Glenn is calling from Ontario, California, listening to XM. Hey, Glenn.
Oh, hi, Mike. I'm actually in Canada.
Oh, Ontario, Canada. My bad.
No.
Where at in Ontario?
Oh, central Ontario, around the Muskoka area.
Oh, yeah, really? That's not far from Thessalon, is it?
Yeah, I think it's a little further north to go there.
Oh, is it? Okay.
At any rate, I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
And the reason I enjoy it is because you don't give us that 19 Arab hijackers with the box cutters fairy tale. I just can't listen to that anymore.
Well, I do sometimes when I make the point that 15 of them came from Saudi Arabia and we immediately attacked Afghanistan. So I mean I do still say it, but I don't buy the official story any more than you do.
Well, that's why I listen to your show. I don't feel like you're a left-wing gatekeeper.
No.
Guarding the truth.
No, there are other people who do that much better than I.
Oh, there's, yeah.
I'm like you and millions of other people. I'm just looking for the truth. I'll know it when I see it, and I haven't seen it yet regarding that particular issue and some more.
Well, it's really becoming sophisticated, the books that are available now. The investigation that's going on, that each book and each documentary that comes out has more information.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very sophisticated information now concerning the background of the CIA. It's very fascinating. Anyway, I wanted to say thank you very much because I can listen to your program. I know I won't get that fairy tale.
Well, thank you. That's what we try to stay away from, the fairy tales. I tell Molly fairy tales a lot, and, but not on the show. Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate it, Glenn. We got to go, so we'll talk again. And thanks for participating in the program this week, however you did that. Take care. Have a good weekend. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney. Where is he? Wherever you are.